No one lays down the law like Karen Key.
This is the Law Report on SAFM.
And a very good evening to you from tonight's Law Report programme. This evening we're focusing on property law, and joining me once again in our Cape Town studios is property law attorney Ishmael Mohammed, and he's a director of Mohammed and Leon Attorneys practicing here in Cape Town. Ishmael, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Always happy to be here, Karen.
And I just need to say thank you. It's our last show. We're not going to be back. This is the last of the Law Report, so you're on the very last one. So
yes, it's a bit of a sad moment for me, but I'm happy to have done the show this
Thank
long.
You very much for joining me. And from next week, there's going to be a whole new lineup. I'm sure lots of exciting new programs, but I will not be back with the Law Report next week. We've got a few emails to deal with this evening, so we'll start with those. But you can call in the meantime on 0892 10 2010 or SMS on 40938. And if you call in on 0892 10 2010, just leave your name and number with my producer and we'll call you back as soon as we're done with the emails. Right, let's start. This first one says, this one actually sounds quite awful. It says, my neighbor has installed cameras for her house, including an electric fence. My concern is she went on and changed the direction of one of the cameras and it is now facing in my house at a direction of plus minus 45 degrees. She's interfering with my freedom. The said camera was not facing my house when installed by the security company. Her electric fence is installed too close to my steel-erected carport. We are not on good terms with her, and I cannot speak to her and don't know how to resolve this. Do I consult the company that installed the security devices or the local municipality to address this with the bylaws?
Okay, the situation here is essentially twofold. Number one, it is your right to privacy, and secondly, it is your safety that is a concern. Now, let's look at the first one. That would be your right to privacy. Now, according to the listener, the camera is facing at her house at a 45 degree angle. Now, that is, in simple words, not allowed. You cannot simply aim a camera at somebody's house, at their door, at their window, at them, essentially, and record what they are doing, whether there's audio or not audio. This is not allowed. The only way that this would be allowed is if the camera were watching the public road and your front door or your window or portion of your property happened to be within the camera's line of sight. That you wouldn't really have anything to do against because the camera's not directed towards you, it's directed towards the road. However, if it's directly on your house, then yes, you can have the camera moved. This wouldn't be something that you would take up with a security company because the company never had a mandate with you. They didn't install anything for you. Therefore, they have no obligation to move the camera. As you say in your statement, when the camera was first installed, it wasn't facing your house.
The
neighbor moved it afterwards, which means that it's the neighbor's responsibility to move that camera. Now, not being on speaking terms with the neighbor can make things a little bit more complicated because the first thing you would do is approach the neighbor and say, you are infringing upon my right to privacy. I do need you to move this camera because if you don't, I will take further action. Now, what that action would be would essentially be an interdict through the court.
It becomes quite a costly business.
It can become costly business, but there isn't really anything else. Because remember, we are looking at neighbors. We're not looking at a sectional title. As far as we can tell from the information that's been provided, this isn't sectional title where you have trustees that you can approach or homeowners association or some other governing body. What you have is two individual private entities, private people that are having or at the start of a dispute. And that dispute being the one infringing upon the other one's right to privacy. And that's what the courts are for.
What about now, the bylaws?
Look, the bylaws, again, the municipality is not really going to get involved because it's not really infringing on them. And our bylaws don't make provision for privacy. This is a national issue. That everyone has an inherent right to privacy.
But when we have like these local bylaws, and you know, if somebody's dog is barking excessively, those sort of local government bylaws.
Yes,
bylaw
we do that,
things.
But those are sort of on noise limitations.
Not on this sort
you know,
of thing.
On nuisance okay. and okay. disturbance.
Well, that's
now,
a nuisance.
The camera's not really a nuisance, as an invasion of privacy. So it's a bit different okay. to a nuisance. You know, so it's unlikely that you're going to find a bylaw that's going to give you the result that you want here. This would most likely be something that you would have to approach the court for. I don't see this being a drawn out or too costly because it's quite a simple issue. Move the camera. We're not saying remove the camera, but move the camera so that it doesn't angle towards your house. Getting an order like that, I do not see a judge turning that order down.
Would sending them a lawyer's letter have any...
A lawyer's letter,
before
definitely.
You started going the whole
yes,
court
definitely.
Route.
Look, that would be how you would start the legal process. As I say, approaching your neighbor first with...
Which doesn't seem like a possible thing.
Yeah, but with a friendly reminder that if you don't move the camera or angle the camera away from my house, I'm going to get the attorneys involved. If the neighbor doesn't do it, you then get the attorneys involved, and that might be the incentive the neighbor needs to move the angle of the camera. Again, not removing the camera, because the neighbor would be able to say, I need the camera for safety reasons. You can't take away somebody else's safety.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't mean it needs to face your house.
Which it wasn't when it was installed by the exactly. security company, so it's not nothing to do with them at
exactly.
all.
Exactly. So a lawyer's letter there could have the desired effect, failing which, unfortunately, you would have to approach the court. That's the first issue. The second issue is a safety issue itself. Now, this is not the same type of safety that we have with the reason for the cameras, but this is a physical safety issue, that being that the electric fencing has been installed very close to the steel carport. Now, as we know, steel can carry
yourself.
A current, and even if someone's not reaching up to touch the fencing, they could be touching the carport at the bottom, and they could be electrocuted in this way. That is a safety issue. Again, approaching the neighbor to say, you need to move this, it's not safe. Even if the neighbor would then put insulation in, maybe onto your carport, maybe onto the electric fencing, some sort of a middle ground, that can be done. It is one way to try to resolve this. If not, again, the same application to the court saying, we need to have this electric fencing moved. This is a safety issue. Again, I don't see a court turning this application down.
Okay, so I think, would there not be some... I'm always worrying about having to go to court and all the money, and you sort of think, is it worth it in the end? Is there nothing legal or law, some other facet of the law, that you could actually get them to do something with a fence? Because that is actually
a serious safety issue. There you could bring in the municipality.
Okay.
Because on that side, you could then be saying that there is a current that can be moved from one point to another. So the electricity department of the municipality do have inspectors who should be able to come out, have a look at that, and then be able to say whether or not this is a safety issue or whether this current is going to be moved. And they would be able to step in. But considering it's the same neighbor, it's the same issue, but if you are going to court, you might as well throw it all in the same hand.
But in this respect, though, I mean, you can understand the camera that was installed by the security company facing in the correct direction. The neighbors obviously moved it, okay? In the second case, though, the company installing the electric fence and that steel carport was there, surely they should have realized that it's a little bit too close to a steel carport? I mean, you know, so the neighbor could possibly have a case against the electric fence company.
Possibly, but again, at this point, we don't know all the information about when this fencing was put up, when the carport was put up, the type of steel used, this type of current that's going through. So we don't have the information to say, yes, this is definitely a safety issue. It could be seen as a safety issue. We could have the contractors that came in and did the installation who have maybe put up certain insulation, or they might have tested the metal and said, well, it doesn't carry a current. We don't know this at this time. That's why at this point, it's best to get in an inspector to have a look and then go after them. And again, the neighbor is your party at fault. They are the ones that have it installed. It does belong to them. If this was my neighbor, I would be taking action.
Okay, so possibly the first thing when it comes to the fence is maybe you yourself, as the listener who wrote us this email, they could then call in an inspector and say, what is your opinion of this fence?
Correct.
So they would have some sort of legitimate reason for having a problem with it.
Correct.
So not just, oh, you're just, you know, worrying for nothing. No, well, I actually got an inspector in who knows about this stuff and this. So what sort of inspector, where would they find one of these people?
Look, they could contact
normal municipality.
Municipality would have inspectors. They could contact another security company who does the sorts of installations, and they could give an opinion on it as well. As long as you have an expert opinion. And it's not...
My friend Bob from down the road.
Exactly. You know, your uncle's neighbor who happened to have maybe gotten electrocuted once in 20 years ago, who says he knows everything about it.
No.
Someone who has credentials who can definitely say this is what it's all about.
Okay, great. So to the listener who wrote this, you have got quite a few remedies. And basically, in both instances, you are in the right.
You are in the right.
And correct. You've got every reason to take this further.
Correct.
Okay. Right. If you have any questions, 0892 10 20 10 or SMS on 40938. The next one is, I think it's everybody's nightmares. The listener says, I'm being evicted from the house that I bought because the agent didn't pay the owner. What should I do?
Okay. This one is a little bit more complicated because we don't have a lot of information.
No. If the listener's listening that sent us that, if you'd like to call in and maybe give us a little bit more information on that, because I think we might need quite a bit more, because that just sounds a little hectic to me.
Yes, this is very open-ended. I'll try to sort of cover all the bases on this. But when we look at it, so the listener is being evicted from the house.
So they sounded like they bought, not they're renting rather than buying. If you're being evicted, they didn't pay the owner. Because some people pay rent through the agent.
I'm being evicted from the house that I bought because the agent didn't pay the owner.
Maybe they took occupation.
They took occupation. Mm. So if I were to sketch a scenario, I'd say that the house went on sale through an agent. The buyer came along, loved the house, wanted to buy the house, signed an OTP.
It's an offer to purchase.
Offer to purchase. Yeah. Either paid the deposit or paid the full amount to the agent. The agent's responsibility is then to pay the seller. The attorney will do the transfer and the house would then change hands. From the information that we have, it seems as if the money changed hands once from the purchaser to the agent and didn't change hands a second time from the agent to the seller. And now there's essentially no sale. And without a sale, there's no transfer. Without a transfer, the purchaser has no right to the house.
Would you normally pay the money to the agent, though?
Usually the OTP or the offer to purchase would allow a deposit to be paid to the agent, where 99% of the time, if the property is being bought without a bond, the cash gets paid to the conveyancer, to the attorney. The attorney then pays that money to the seller upon transfer. Again, this is not to say that the agent cannot be the party to hold the money. It's just usually it's the attorney that holds the money. If there's a bond involved, then the money doesn't change hands because the bank will issue a guarantee to say we will pay the money upon transfer. Transfer happens, the bank pays out, and the seller obviously gets his money. Now, from the information that we have, the purchaser paid the money to the agent and then took occupation. The agent didn't pay the money to the seller. Now, what that says is that transfer could not go through because no money was paid. The seller remains the owner of the property, and therefore the seller is within his or her right to bring an eviction application because they do own the house. And there is somebody living in the house that's not supposed to be there. Now, to go a little bit further into this, we need to look at the offer to purchase. What were the conditions? Was there supposed to be a bond? If there was supposed to be a bond, was the bond granted? Because if the bond was granted, the agent could not take the money. The money would have been paid to the seller. That means that the seller could be in breach of this agreement. And if that's the case, the purchaser can fight to have the agreement upheld and not be evicted.
If the agent has run off with the money, there is the fidelity fund. If the agent
is fidelity fund. Now,
registered.
I was going to come to this, but this is a separate issue again.
This is very complicated.
Yes, this does become awfully complicated because now every agent needs to be registered with with the Estate Agencies Affairs Board. Now, they are the overseeing body of all estate agents, whether they're doing sales or rentals, whatever the case may be, in the immovable property sector. They must have a valid Fidelity Fund certificate through the EAAB. Now, that Fidelity Fund certificate is essentially insurance. If you want to just take it as, you know, as plain as simple as it is essentially insurance. And this says that if a purchaser pays to an agent X amount of money, and that agent runs away with the money, the purchaser can put in a claim with the EAAB, and the EAAB will then pay out the money that was stolen.
But just hoping that this agent now possibly is now registered.
That's where our problem comes in. If the agent is registered with the EAAB and has a valid Fidelity Fund certificate.
Is this something that has to be renewed every year or
every
something?
Every year it needs to be reviewed. There is a amount that needs to be paid by the agent. There are certain exams the agents need to write. There are certain points that they need to get. There's an entire system to this. In other words, the EAAB wants to ensure that the agents are up to speed on the relevant laws, that they are acting ethically, that their trust accounts are properly audited. You know, essentially that they are not stealing from the public or anyone else. If the agent was not registered with the EAAB or did not have a valid Fidelity Fund certificate when this deal was concluded, they are not going to pay out because they did not, or the agent did not fall under the EAAB at the time. And if that's the situation, then the only recourse that the purchaser would have is to privately sue the agent.
Okay, but if that listener is listening now, and that was your email that came in, would, if you'd like to get some more information, possibly just give us a call. And, well, anyone can give us a call on 0892 10 2010 or SMS on 40938. Because if we had more information, possibly we could get a better idea of what the situation was.
Yeah, we could definitely give more direction as to which way to go if we had more information.
Okay, right. As I mentioned, if you'd like to call in, 0892 10 2010 or SMS on 40938.
Let's face it, the workload that comes with matric can be stressful. But with the SABC Education Virtual Academy, it doesn't have to. SEVA offers matrics a world of learning support materials in key learning areas. Support includes video lessons, lesson notes, revision flashcards, self-assessment activities, and much more. Be wise or don't miss out. Visit seva.co.za. A proud initiative brought to you by SABC Education. Enriching minds, enriching lives.
News from the TV License Office. With our new SMS balance inquiry function, you can now get your TV license balance conveniently on your cell phone. SMS your ID number or TV license number to 44210 and voila. 44210. Standard SMS rates apply. Quick and easy. TV licenses make a difference.
The greatest story will unfold in Russia as the world gathers for one of the biggest global sporting events, the FIFA World Cup. It is the battle between 32 nations from the 14th of June to the 15th of July 2018. Tune in live to SABC TV channels and SABC radio stations. SABC is the official broadcaster of the FIFA World Cup 2018, Russia. The greatest story. Unfolding.
No one lays down the law like Karen Key.
This is the Law Report on SAFM.
Right, we're going to go to the lines in a moment, but just a reminder, if you'd like to call in, 0892 10 2010 or SMS on 40938. I think we have Sean on the line in Umtata. Sean, good evening. Is Sean with us? No, they're still trying to get Sean. Sean, are you with us? No, not yet. Right. Just to go back to that one about the estate agents, and how do you actually do you just ask when you are dealing with an estate agent, do you ask them if they're registered?
The best thing to do is you need to ask them. Now, if they are properly registered, they get not only a certificate with a date that's, you know, quite bold on there and it's got a gold stamp, so a copy, no good.
Okay.
You need to see the actual gold stamp. It's got a date. They also get an identity card with their name, ID number, everything on there.
And you can take a copy of that.
You can take a copy of that. So if you are dealing with an agent, the best thing to do is always ask the agent. Be upfront about it. Remember, there's a lot of money on the line. This is whether you are an agent, whether you're a seller or a purchaser. There's a lot of money on the line. It's a very big transaction that's about to go through. Be upfront with the agent and say, are you registered? Is your FFC valid as we speak right now? Show me proof.
Okay, and you're quite entitled to do
that. You are fully entitled to do that.
Okay.
If they cannot show that to you, if they say, well, it's at the office, you say, well, that's fine. Go to your office and bring it through. I'm happy to sign your paperwork. Without that, I'm not signing. right?
More than that, you're safeguarding yourself, basically.
You have to safeguard yourself. More than that, you can take their details, which they, if they're an honest agent, they have to be prepared to give you these details, and you can go online to the EAB website, and you can run a search, and you can see if this person is registered, or you can pick up the phone to the EAB, and you can say to them, this is the agent I'm dealing with whichever agency it happens to be, this is the person's name, are they registered? Because what might happen is the agent might say to you, I don't hold a Fidelity fund. However, the agency I work for does hold the Fidelity fund, which is also valid. Because if the agent is employed through the agency and the agent runs away with the money or does something that's unscrupulous, the agency's FFC will pay out. So you will still be covered.
Okay, but just take that extra 5 minutes and just double check.
Take the extra 5 minutes. Check
might
on
save
it,
yourself a lot
make
of
sure.
hassle.
Remember, 5 minutes of your time now is going to save you a fortune in legal fees later.
Okay, right. I think we've got Sean in on the line. Sean in Omtata, good evening. Hello, Sean. Sean, hello. I thought we didn't have him, then we did have him. Sean, are you with us? No, we'll try get back to Sean. Sean, so we sort of not on the line when we were hoping it to be. But we're going to another SMS we just got. It says, I hope you'll be able to give me some guidance on the process of selling my property. My parents passed on and there was no will. The matter is with a lawyer, which he's sorting out with the master's office. Your guidance to educate and give me better understanding, please. I'm awaiting your feedback. Right, so the parents died, there was a property and there was no will, and then the lawyer's now sorting that all out with the master's office.
Okay, that one, again, complicated, but as law unfortunately happens to be.
It always is.
If the parents have passed away and the house was in the parents' names, without a will, the house would then move over to the parents' heirs, whoever that may be. So it might be the listener as a single child, there might be siblings involved, or whatever the case is. If we take it at just the listener, what will happen is the parents' estate will be wound up through the master's office, and then the property will be transferred to the heir. This is a transfer, changes names on the title deed. The house now belongs to the heir.
He wants him to sell it, though.
At which point he's fully entitled to sell it.
Once the estate's been wound up.
Now, there are two ways to do the sale. On the one hand, you can wait for the property to come into your name, in which case you then get an agent whose Fidelity fund you have checked, sign it up, put it on the market, and sell. Normal sale, normal transaction, nothing funny about that.
But the problem with that is that you have to pay transfer duty from the parents' names to yours.
Yes.
Okay, and that could be quite pricey.
Yes.
Okay.
Second way that you can do it is you have the property sold out of the estate. So if this is the final goal, if you have no intention of holding onto the property or renting it out or moving in or whatever the case may be, you can sell it directly from the estate. Now, when the executor of the estate is appointed, now usually if there's no will, no one has been nominated by the deceased. In that case, one of the children. If it's an only child, if there's two, you pick one, and that person then becomes the executor. The executor is seen as the person in control of the estate, as if the deceased was still alive, to make whatever decisions need to be made. You can then sign the deed of sale, the offer to purchase, as the executor of the estate. The property is sold straight out of the estate, so it never becomes yours, gets sold directly. The money that's generated through the sale will then be put into the estate. So you're basically substituting the property for the money. When the estate is then wound up, the money gets paid out to the heir instead of the property being transferred. So if you are looking to sell the property, that's the final goal. It will actually save you money by selling it directly, because you're not paying transfer fees to start with, and you're not having to pay a second commission on the property when you're selling it. Obviously, if you're taking a transfer in the initial stages, you pay the transfer, you don't pay a commission because there's no agent involved. But if you want to sell, skip the transfer duty, sell it out to the estate, take the money.
So it's relatively simple.
It is quite simple.
Right, I think we found Sean back on the line. Sean in Omtata, good evening. Hello, Sean. Oh, apparently there's a problem with the phone. I don't know what it is, but every time they get somebody on the line, then they disappear. Well, we're going to try and hopefully get our next guest up. Maybe we'll have more luck with that. possibly it's that Line 1 thing again causing trouble. I don't know. But that Sean Sham, Sean, you're probably listening to us on the radio and thinking, I'm here. We can't hear you. We will keep trying, though. Another SMS while we're waiting for Sean. It says, within 3 weeks of occupation of a flat, a damp spot appeared on the ceiling from a leak in the ceiling space. We are convinced that it was a patent defect that was not pointed out by the seller. It will be an expensive repair. What recourse do we have? Is this a sort of buyer beware thing, or?
This can definitely be a buyer beware thing, because if it's a defect like that, if the defect was painted over. Now, remember, we have different types of defects. We have a defect that was repaired by the seller and the repair was not done correctly. If that's the case, it's buyer beware. You've bought it for Stuart's, as is. Very difficult to show that this is something that the seller deliberately tried to hide away. If you can prove that the seller was trying to hide this away, that could be fraudulent misrepresentation.
Well, how would you prove that, though?
That's the thing. Again, you need to get experts in. You need to get someone who says, oh, well, you can see that this paint is different to that paint, which is a quick patch up, versus there was no work done at all. It was only paint. Clearly, this person just wanted to hide this thing away. Or alternatively, you could see an entire section of the roof was redone, trusses were redone. This person definitely tried to fix this problem, but failed.
So someone would have to go up in the roof and check out an expert.
Would actually have to go and check this entire thing. Can be quite difficult. The other thing is, if this was a developer, if you were buying off plan, or you were buying in a massive sectional title scheme that's gone up, and you know it's just dozens of units being sold, the developer would fall under the Consumer Protection Act. So they would not have a defense of Footstuart's or as is, because they are selling units in the ordinary course of business. However, if you have an individual seller who's just owned the flat for a year, 2 years, 10 years, whatever the case may be, and then decided to sell, the sale cannot be seen to be in the ordinary course of business, which means the CPA is not going to apply. And because of that, your defects are going to fall under Footstuart's. So unless you can prove the fraudulent misrepresentation.
So the best thing is to get somebody up in that ceiling and go and have a look and see if any work was done, or if they can spot anything that's been patched or anything
like that.
Yes, but again,
very difficult, because one expert will say, in my opinion, I found this. Another expert who might have a slightly different opinion, having maybe more or less experience in a particular field, and this can take you down a very long road of litigation.
Okay, right. We are having, as I mentioned, problems with the phone, but some people are getting through. So if you'd like to try, it's 0892 10 2010 or SMS on 40938. So fingers crossed, we've got Tommy on the line from Velcom. Tommy, are you with us? No. Apparently not. The phone is really not working tonight. Okay, I do apologize, but let me just ask the questions on their behalf, because I do have them here. Sean says a friend of his moved into a flat, and within a week, all the flat rentals were reduced except for this particular friend. So, but maybe that was because it was a new rental or something. I don't know, but that just sounds weird.
Okay, so that's a bit of a strange scenario that all the rentals would be reduced. It's not something you hear of quite often.
Not normally, no.
Go up instead of going down. Now we have to look at the type of rental that is being done here. If it's an individual flat and the rental amount is 5,000 rand a month, shared between, or let's make it 6,000, shared between three people in a three-bedroom flat, everybody's paying 2,000 rand a month. If the rental gets reduced, it gets reduced for everyone without, you know, without anything. It's 6,000, it's now 5,000, everybody gets 333 rand off, essentially, in which case the friend should have his rental reduced. However, if we were to take a different scenario and we were to say there are three individual flats with three individual people, everybody was paying 5,000 rand a month and the landlord has decided to give flat one and two a reduction to 4,000 rand, there's no obligation to give the reduction to flat number three. Remember, each tenant holds a separate right to occupation. And that right to occupation comes with its own rental, its own terms, its own duration. Although it might be a standard lease agreement being used, it doesn't mean that if unit one gets a reduction, unit three needs to get the same reduction. The landlord-tenant relationship is between that landlord and that tenant. This is not a communal
Okay. Industry. So it's just unfortunate then.
Unfortunately, if it is an individual flat, there's no obligation on the landlord to drop everybody's rental.
Okay. Earlier we did spoke about an SMS with a neighbor who was moving cameras around and putting up electric fences next to steel carports. And Tommy, that we've been hoping to get on the line, but because of our fabulous phone system that isn't working tonight, I'll ask the question. Tommy says the neighbor's made an opening in their boundary wall and now has access to Tommy's property. Well, you can't do that.
No, you can't do that at
all. You can't do that.
Remember, the boundary wall is essentially any boundary wall between two plots or between two separate properties. That boundary wall belongs to both owners. 50% of that wall belongs to the owner on the left, and 50% of the wall belongs to the owner on the right.
Oh, hang on, wait, it's got worse now. I've just got a further thing about this. Apparently, the water is going under Tommy's foundation of the house. They obviously opened up the wall because they didn't want all the water lying in their garden, so they opened up the wall. You can't do that.
No, they can't. What they are doing now is they are causing damage to his house. And by opening the wall, it's intentional damage. They want the water to run through. So number one, the wall should not have been opened without his permission. Remember, it's half of his wall. Number two, his right to privacy and his right to safety and security is being impaired because now anyone can literally walk onto his property through the wall. And number three, we have damp going through, damaging the foundations, which, again, is damages. He's got a massive claim against
What is the first step here?
The first step here is
get an attorney.
Get an attorney. Get the wall put up again. Nothing stops from putting this wall up again.
But I would be nervous to spend the money putting that wall up because the neighbors are just going to take it down because the water's in their garden, you know.
I would say spend the money, get the wall up, stop further damage.
Okay, if that's
rather
first thing.
If you are going to fight the neighbor, rather fight for a smaller amount than have to fight for a bigger amount and have to sort out quite a lot of damage. Does take time to sort out. Get the wall back up, stop the damage, and get your neighbor to behave.
But what I would do before you even do that, take pictures of the wall and the water going into the foundations. If you've got all that, it's proof.
Whatever evidence you need to get.
Keep all of that.
You know, like you say, he says that there's damage being caused at the foundations. Get somebody in to confirm that. You know, it's one thing for the wall to get a bit wet. It's another thing for mold or damage to happen. Whatever's happening, get experts in. Know what you're talking about.
And get an attorney.
Get an attorney. Because one thing that we forget about our courts, attorneys, we know the law. Our judges know the law. Your attorney is not a builder. Your judge is not a doctor. They are going to take expert reports on this. They do want to know reasonably what should have or could have happened. And that's what they're going to use to apply the law to get to their finding. So as much evidence as you can put together to substantiate your claim, always do that.
And this is somewhere where if you've done any work to try and stop the water coming out, you can actually claim all that money back.
Can.
You can claim, besides the fact that you can claim for damages for the foundations, if that's there, you can claim for the wall being taken down. You can
claim
for all of that.
For necessary work that you had to do to prevent further damage.
And what about your legal fees?
And you can claim your legal fees as well.
Okay. So, but this is a serious case.
I would reckon Tommy
would win this case.
Yeah, look, from the information we have, I can't see him losing because the neighbor's taken the wall out to let the water come through.
Mm.
You know, I'm taking guesses it's not in Cape Town because I doubt any Cape Townian would have said, I don't want the water.
No, not now anyway. Also, can I take another piece of wall out for some more of that water? Not to make light of the situation, Tommy,
but we are desperate for water down here in Cape Town. You have a case, you should take this.
Yeah, no, this is, I mean, people, they just do things, it fascinates me what people do for themselves without thinking of the consequences to somebody else. It's just amuses me, no end.
That's
right, as I mentioned, the phone is giving us huge trouble, but if you'd like to call in, maybe just leave a message with the producer. He can put the question up on the screen. Otherwise, you can SMS, I think is probably the best way this evening on 40938. And we'll be back with you in just a moment.
Thousands of runners gather again in Cape Town for the 2018 Old Mutual Two Oceans Marathon. The 56-kilometer ultramarathon offers breathtaking views of both the Atlantic and Indian Oceans. It is the world's most beautiful marathon. Join SABC Sport bright and early on Easter Saturday, the 31st of March at 5:30 a.m. Tune in to SABC 2 and your favorite SABC radio station for the 49th consecutive Old Mutual Two Oceans Marathon. Brought to you by
SABC Sport, for the love of the game.
No one lays down the law like Karen Key.
This is the Law Report on SAFM.
Right, and we're back with some questions on the SMS line now, because as I mentioned, the phone is giving us huge issues and we can't seem to get anybody back on the phone. I'll just go through the SMSs. It says, I've been evicted from my house with men who are heavily armed with guns and they're throwing all my belongings outside in the street. I think your first port of call here is call the police.
Definitely. Your first port of call is to call the police. If there are men that have come in with guns, baseball bats, machetes, whatever the case may be, or they've just come in and politely asked you to leave. Either way, they're not allowed to do that. The only way to have somebody removed from a property is with a court order. There is no other way to do it. Anyone who says that there is another way to do it is wrong. If you are in a structure, you're in a house, you had a right to occupation of this place, there must be a court order. If the landlord has taken off the door, put other people in on top of you, put people in to remove you, this is illegal. The police need to be called in and they need to be put to a stop. You can, on the one hand, it's a criminal sanction because it's illegal. As I say, it's not unlawful, it's illegal to evict someone without a court order. Your landlord can be charged with an unlawful eviction. It's a criminal offense. More to that, you can do what is called a spoliation order. Now, a spoliation order is if you are in possession of something, you have undisturbed possession of something, such as a flat, a house, immovable property, in fact, certain movables as well, and somebody unlawfully takes this away from you, you can have a court order to reverse that, to have you put back into the property. In fact, I had a case quite recently where the landlord had put a security gate over the doorway leading into the kitchen, hoping that if the tenant can't get to the fridge and can't get to the stove and so on, they'll pack up and they'll leave.
You can't do that.
You're not allowed to do that. All the tenant did was went to court, went to legal aid, went to court, got a spoliation order, and the gate was taken off within 6 hours. Sheriff got there, said, open the gate. If you don't open the gate, we're taking the gate off ourselves and we're getting the cops in. If there are people there that are unlawfully evicting you, they're not allowed to do this. You have a criminal sanction against your landlord as well as the people that are evicting you, and you have a civil claim against them as well. Not only to put you back into the property, but also for any damages that you suffer.
To your goods or yourself.
To your goods. As they're removing goods, if anything is broken, anything is lost, you have a claim.
Okay, right. Oh, hang on, there's quite a lot of SMSs have come in now. And I have to just go back to the one. My property is registered in somebody else's name at the deeds office. Whose fault is that?
Well, that's a bit of a broad question. Did you buy the property? Did you inherit the property? What happened? How did somebody else's name get on? Now, if the transfer happened, it should have happened into your name. You should have signed certain transfer documentation, and the title deed should have then been put in your name. If that didn't happen, there's unfortunately quite a long trail of events that we need to look at before we can determine why this has happened. What has happened in the past, what I do know of, is where you have a sectional title scheme and you have unit 1 and you have unit 2, but on the plan the numbers are reversed, and then when the properties are sold and transferred, you end up moving into your neighbor's flat and your neighbor moves into yours because the numbers on the doors are reversed. That's not an end of the world. That's simply a rectification transfer that gets done. It's quite cost effective and quite quick. But in this particular circumstance, I'm not sure what the situation is, so I can't really give a detailed answer.
Yeah, we don't have more information other than what I've read out, so... Okay, we'll have to carry it. If a seller secures a buyer for his property, is an estate agent still required, or can the seller approach a conveyancer directly?
The seller can approach a conveyancer directly. No need for an estate agent. The estate agent's job is to market the property and to assist the buyer and the seller in seeing the deal through. But mostly it comes into the marketing of the property, getting it to the market and finding a buyer. If the seller knows who the buyer is, or the buyer has already approached them, you can simply make an appointment with a conveyancer, go through, the conveyancer will be able to help you with the offer to purchase and everything that you need after that.
Okay. Right, there's quite a number here. I'm going to just go with you. We've got a call in a moment or two ago. Couldn't put it on the air, unfortunately, from Skosano, who says he bought the house in his mother's name. The mother died. Now can he just transfer it to his name or what?
No, unfortunately not. If the house was bought into your mother's name and your mother then died, the house forms part of your mother's estate. And as with our previous caller, you would have to wind up your mother's estate. And through the winding of the estate, if you are the only heir, the house would then be transferred to you.
Now, what concerns me here, if there was no will, for example, and maybe there's five siblings, three, four, five siblings, that house would form part of the estate, and that sale of that house, the monies would be divided equally.
Correct.
So this particular person who bought it would not get their own money back.
No.
Unless it was left to him in the will.
If it was left to him, left to you in the will, no problem, the house is yours. If it was not left to you in the will and you have four siblings and there's five of you all together, each of you are going to have an equal share in that house through the estate. Unless you can show something else in which you had bought the property, you paid your mother, whether you were paying the rates or whatever, there was some agreement between the two of you that the house would be yours.
Even though he had bought it for her.
Remember, you can buy something for anyone. Doesn't mean it's going to come back to you. You could give your mother a 50 million rand mansion in Camps Bay, hoping you get it back when she decides to leave it to your sister. There's nothing you can really do about that.
Hmm.
So you've got to be very careful. You cannot simply transfer the house into your name. You do need to wind up the estate first.
Okay, I'll try and go through these quite quickly now. And I must just say, I do apologize. I got an SMS saying, can this woman speak slower and don't speak while the man is speaking, please? So I will try and speak slower, and I'm sorry if I've been speaking over you. So I do apologize for that. I don't know why I'm speaking so fast tonight. Okay, the next one says, I have a huge levies bill with Propel. I'm not sure who Propel are, for a flat, and they refuse to make payment arrangements, and it's getting higher. What do I stand to do legally?
Legally, you need to pay your levies. Now, Propel is a company that assists body corporates with levy collections. We're not going to go into the details as to how Propel works. So simply, they are a company that helps body corporates with levy collections. If you do owe money on your levies, you do need to pay that. Unfortunately, if you are not paying your levies, then the body corporate is allowed to hand that file over, whether it be to attorneys, to debt collectors, to whoever. Now, Propel, as I say, they assist body corporates with it, which means they have the similar powers that a body corporate would have. And when the file gets handed over, fees do get added onto this. There are legal fees for letters, for summonses, for judgments, and so on and so on, that do go out, and you do need to pay this. The best thing to do is try to pay this as quickly as possible.
Well, he's saying they refuse to make payment arrangements.
Look, refusing to make payment arrangements doesn't mean they're refusing to take payment. Do not wait on them to say, yes, we accept 50 rand a month before you start making payments. Every payment you make is going to reduce how much you owe them. And by making payments, it's less likely that the body corporate is going to take legal action against you because they are getting the money. Because another thing is, payment arrangements do not always mean if you owe 2,000 rand in levies, they will reduce that to 1,000 rand. They might say, we don't want to reduce the capital to 1,000 rand, but we will take 200 rand a month towards the 2,000 rand. And if they don't say yes to the 200 rand a month, still keep paying the 200. You have to pay something. Remember, levies are a statutory obligation. You have to pay it.
Right, okay. It says, I am a student renting a place and my bursary paid the whole year's rent, but paid a month ahead. Do I have a right to ask my landlord that the extra month be paid towards me? Would that maybe not be the month's deposit or something, do you think?
That could be a month's deposit. If it is a damages deposit that has been paid over, then this is more a question between you and the bursary than it is between you and the landlord. Because if the 12 months have been paid up front and there was a 13th month which was paid as the deposit, the question then becomes, whose money is that? Was the money paid from the bursary to the landlord on behalf of you, or was it paid from the bursary to the landlord on behalf of the bursary? Because on the one hand, they could be saying, we will provide you with accommodation or with funds for accommodation, be that as it may. They've made the payment, you stay there for a year and then you leave, and they are entitled to their deposit back once you leave. Alternatively, this money is for you, but we're paying it to the landlord, but it's your money, in which case you would be entitled to the 13th month should there be no damages when you leave. So that is something you need to actually follow up with the bursary. Whose money is it? Does the money still belong to the bursary, or is the money yours? But at the end of the day, the 13th month, the deposit has to be refunded by the landlord.
Okay. Right. That one, that question we had about the property being registered in the incorrect name, the listeners just got back. It's really, you can just see it's Majawi. His name is Majawi John Molope, but on the title deed, it appears as Mankoni Joseph Molope. So it's the first two names are incorrectly spelt.
Okay, that's...
As opposed to Majawi, as opposed to Mankoni, and the second name, they put John. Oh, his name is John, but they've put Joseph.
Okay, so now we have but to ask the question, is this simply a spelling error? Is it just a typing error that somebody made somewhere along the way? Are the ID numbers correct?
Okay, so they need to check the ID number. Okay.
Now, remember, if we're saying John versus...
Well, they're calling... His name Joseph is Majawi versus, as yeah. opposed to Mankoni, which is on there.
So we're saying, you know, John versus Joseph, if it's the same ID number, it's probably most likely a spelling. If it's a completely different ID number, it's a completely different person, which means we got to start digging a bit further to find out who made this mistake and what steps do we need to take to rectify this.
Okay. Right. Gosh, we've got about 8 minutes left. We've got so many things to get through. How do I sell a house without a property agent but with my lawyers for conveyancing procedure?
Well, as I said, the
need the agent.
The purpose of the agent is to market the property for you, to go out and find a buyer. If you have a buyer, you simply approach the attorney and you say, I'm the seller, this is the buyer, we'd like a transfer to happen. The attorney will be able to do everything that needs to be done.
Okay. I want to know the procedure to rezone. I don't think we've got time for this one. Though. We'll try and give you some very basic information. To rezone a residential property to a community service center or church.
Okay, that we definitely don't have
time
for. What I would say is the first thing is do get hold of a town planner. This is a town planning issue because it has to do with zoning. They will be able to walk you through the process. It's not always possible, depending on the usage, depending on the restrictions on the title deed and so on. You might have to do quite a lot more work than you initially wanted to. But a town planner is your first port of call.
Okay. excuse me. My mother passed away in 2008. The heirs are me and my brother. We're both not working owners. This is a plan to secure loans. We're not going to talk about securing loans. Unfortunately, we don't have time. Unfortunately, to the listener, we don't have to do that at the moment. I just wanted to see what else we've got here. What is the disadvantage of building a house without a plan approved by the municipality?
The disadvantage...
I stay in a location.
Okay, the disadvantage of building a plan without the municipality approving plans is that the municipality might be able to come back to you and say, take the structure down. Because at your expense, it is an illegal structure. Alternative to that, the municipality, or before the municipality does, they will say to you, we are giving you X amount of time to have your plans approved, failing which, you'll either have to take the structure down, or they could take the structure down. You don't want to risk this, or you could be hit with a very, very big fine.
So rather just go and get the plans approved.
Get your plans done and then do your building.
Okay.
Stick to your plans.
Now we're going back to the water that came through the wall. It says, I think the attorney is mistaken. Each property owner is obliged to accept the stormwater of the neighbor above him and so on all the way down the water course.
You have to accept the stormwater, but if your neighbor deliberately removes the wall to cause the water to damage your property, that's liability over there. that is liability, because this is not simply stormwater that's running down a hill.
Because surely there would be a channel for the water. Wall had to be removed for it.
Exactly. So there would be something. Yes, the water is going to run downhill. Yes, there is going to be damage. There is going to be erosion. There is going to be all of these things. This is normal course. But if your neighbor deliberately removes a section of the wall so that the water goes onto your property and causes damage, that creates liability on the side of the neighbor. If the neighbor had left the wall there and the water had run around the wall, it's not your neighbor's fault. That is nature. Nobody takes blame for that. Then it's each property owner's responsibility to take whatever steps they can on their property to prevent damage to themselves. But removing the wall so that your damage moves to your neighbor, that's liability.
Right, okay. Hazel in Boxburg, Shamit, you did phone in, but our phone isn't working. We left the message. Says a bond approved at 95%. What time frame must other costs be paid? The 5% bond registration, transfer, etc. And who pays the agent, the seller or the buyer?
Okay, now your 95% bond, and that leaves you with a 5% shortfall that needs to be come up with. Usually your offer to purchase will set out what this is. Now, one of the normal clauses that I've seen states that if a bond is, or if the offer to purchase says that the buyer needs to get 100% bond, and the bank offers a bond less than that, the purchaser can accept the lesser bond, but would have to come up with the balance within the time frame required for the bond.
Okay, so once that bond has been approved, then she would have to pay at that point.
Yes. Now, usually, again, like I said, this all comes down to individual offers to purchase. You've got to check the clause in your offer to purchase. I'll just give two examples. One example is from the date of signature, the purchaser is given 4 weeks to come up with the bond. In that case, the offer could say that if the bond is granted within the 4 weeks, this purchaser will have until the end of those 4 weeks to come up with the shortfall. So you still have 4 weeks. In other words, from signature to 4 weeks, you've got to come up with all the money, whether it's 100% bond or part bond and part cash. Another way that the clause could say is whatever the bond amount is, whatever the cash amount is, all money must be in place, or guarantees for all money must be in place by transfer.
But don't assume that. Now go and have a look at your offer to purchase.
You have to look at your offer. See, what I described now is two clauses saying, or both requiring the money, but at completely different time frames. One being well in the beginning of the transaction, and one being well at the end of the transaction. But then it could be anywhere in between as well.
So go and have a look.
So you have to look at your offer to purchase if you need to speak to the conveyancer and say, what is my time frame?
Okay, and very lastly, she says, who pays the agent, the seller or the buyer? She's obviously the buyer, and they're telling her that she's got to pay the agent.
Generally, it's the seller that pays the agent. The seller pays the agent because the seller is putting the house on the market. The house is being sold at X value, and the agent is then claiming money from the seller because I, as the agent, sold your house. Without me, your house would not have been sold. You would not have made a profit. Therefore, you need to pay me X amount of money.
Could they put that in the contract that the buyer had to sell?
Could put it in the contract.
But that's not legal. Is it legal?
It's legal, but
iffy.
It's iffy. It's check your OTP before you sign. It's not the kind of thing you want to be too happy with, because you know then agents are happy to put sort of
all
any
sorts of things you need
of
to check
figures in. But while we're on that note, just bear in mind that the purchaser pays the conveyancer.
Right, so the buyer pays the conveyancer,
pays
but the seller pays the agent.
Okay. Correct.
Right, well, my thanks once again this evening to property law attorney Ishmael Mohammed, and he's a director of Mohammed and Leon Attorneys practicing here in Cape Town, and he's been my guest on tonight's edition of the Law Report program. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is the last of the Law Report programs. So Ishmael, to you, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the show so regularly, and so you've been so helpful to all my listeners. Thank you very much.
Karen, this has been a fantastic 4 years, I think.
Yes, it's been great. And I think it's actually been longer than that.
It might be longer than that. I'm having so much fun, I'm not even keeping track. I hope that it's really not about them?
Well, I'd just like to thank all the attorneys who've joined me on the show over the years, as well as thanking you, the listeners, for all your interest and your support for the show. I really do appreciate it. Thank you to all of you. And next week, there'll be all sorts of new lineups on the show, on the station. So tune in. I'm sure you'll be enjoying what's coming up next. Well, I'll be back with you again tomorrow evening, just after 9 with Health Matters. So join me for that. It's time now for Stephen Kirker and some nighttime music. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Karen.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Before I go, can I just say one more thing?
You may indeed.
Sorry, I meant to say I've got a new email address if anybody would like to get hold of me. It's karentalksza@gmail.com, and Karen is K-A-R-E-N. So it's karentalksza@gmail.com. Thank you, Stephen. I'll go now.
Thank you very much, karentalksza. I'm going to have to – I didn't write that down properly. I'll probably repeat that for you. Anyway, thanks, Karen. We will, of course, hear from you again for Health Matters on a Tuesday night. We do go into nighttime music for this Monday night after the news.